You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 8th of October. The Jazz defense gets torched by the Blazers. Something to be concerned about in a preseason game? We'll dig into that. The Jazz state of mind is different than it was in the second half, and that might be the biggest challenge. We'll discuss that, plus Thabo Sefolosha joins us for the Culture Code interview series. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. From a snow-covered Park City, Utah, I'm David Locke. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky little numbers and analysis you can't get anywhere else. You can get this daily podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you use, catch all your podcasts. Plus, on your home speaker, you can tell it to play podcast Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. Appreciate it very much. We've got a really cool Facebook group as well called Locked On Jazz, and if you'd like to join that, we would love to have you. Big week on the podcast network. The Locked On NBA preview shows will launch sometime around noon today, and it will be six teams every day for five straight days and give you the insight that you're looking for. All right, let's get into last night. Jazz win but lose. They win 123-112, but if you were not watching the game and you just got the box score, that's not the story. The Blazers score 33 points in the first quarter. They score 31 points in the third quarter. Their offensive rating was hovering around 122 for much of the night. When the Jazz starters were on the floor, the Blazers starters were on the floor, the Blazers crushed the Jazz. Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum played 25 joint minutes together. In those 25 joint minutes, the Blazers outscored the Jazz by 22 points. That's the story of the night. The depth of the Jazz showed. They came back. They outscored them 39-20 in the fourth. They go to 4-0 in the postseason. But the story of the night is that the Blazers' effective field goal percentage was near 70% for most of the night, and the Jazz just got torched defensively. What's interesting is your thought as well, it's Portland. Portland did not do this to Utah last year. Portland's offensive rating last year in four games was a 93, then a 97, then a 101, and then a 103. So they got better every time, which is the traditional trend, frankly, of teams as a season goes on. The Jazz offense actually struggled against Portland. If you recall, in game 82, we had one of our worst offensive nights of the year, and the drop the big style of Portland often caused the Jazz some problems. First game out of the All-Star break was our worst defensive night of the entire season, I believe. So our last two games against Portland, we've struggled offensively as Nurkic drops, impacts the rim, and I thought he had that impact last night as well on the Jazz. You did not see the Jazz getting particularly comfortable. They go in the basket. The Jazz went to the basket, did those things right, and then Nurkic, I thought, really did an incredibly good job of taking away the rim. They were the best team in the league last year of defending the rim, and it showed again. So, really, I, you know, if I'm Portland, I'm pretty ecstatic about what I saw last night. If I'm the Jazz, I'm not as ecstatic. The Jazz had a hard time around the rim offensively. Their shot selection was okay. Their mid-range game has just been really poor, which is fine because you don't want a lot of mid-range. And the Jazz got nine corner three attempts, and they hit really well from three, and they forced a lot of turnovers. Those are the positives on the night. The negative is that the Jazz defense was non-existent, and this is the calling card on this team, which is a little unnerving that that's the case. Through, if you just kind of take the game through three quarters, and that's probably where you want to stop, or really when Dame and CJ check out of the game is probably where you want to stop. So at about the 5-6 minute mark of the third quarter, the Blazers at that moment in time, the Blazers outscored the Jazz And we're shooting 60% from the field, 10 of 22 from three. Dame was 8 of 10, CJ was 8 of 13, and Nurkic was 6 of 7. So their big three just throttled Utah in that stretch. So what's going on with that? Some of it is that their stars are great, and that is, you know, the primary argument against great defensive teams, that the stars of the league are so good that if they just commit, if they have a good night, there's not a lot defenses can do. I think that's probably true, but I also think the Jazz are not playing with a great deal of defensive urgency right now that they need to. They allowed 87 points by the 3-minute mark of the third quarter. Now, that gets to be an interesting concern. So there's two things. One is the Jazz aren't good defensively anymore. That's probably not true. Two is that the league has changed in some way. That might be true. So last night, the Jazz and the Blazers played, who were two of the slower pace of play teams in the NBA, and they played a game with 102 possessions. That would have been the 18th fastest game the Jazz played all of last year. The league's right now playing at an incredibly accelerated rate. Atlanta, Oklahoma City last night played 108 possessions. Houston, San Antonio, which should be a really slow game, played 100 possessions. Milwaukee and Minnesota played 103 possessions. Now, this should be I don't know that this, you know, we should panic or anything, but if the league is really speeding up, everyone in the league is putting an urgency out, there's a chance teams are getting down the floor, getting action before the Jazz defense can put clamps down. Now, Quinn will adjust and, you know, and transition defense becomes even more important than it's ever been before. But that should probably be a little bit of a concern. That's really the concern I can find, is that teams have accelerated the game enough that the Jazz are suddenly having a hard, that the Jazz suddenly are not, that the Jazz defense doesn't have as big an impact and teams are running more. That's the best I can come up with you if there's a bigger issue. Now, Nurkic stretching out and shooting three threes. Two of them counted as threes. One, he had his foot on the line. That's always been something that bothers the Jazz when the big man comes out. I think that's part of it. There was a lack of focus last night. Donovan got pulled 3 minutes into the game by Quinn. AB, I think, got pulled at another time for a lack of defense. There were backdoor cuts. Or a bunch of areas where the Jazz just weren't as strong defensively. The Jazz forced a ton of turnovers last night. They had 19, by the way, in the early going of the game, and finished with 26 turnovers forced. That's actually something they did early last year. It turned out to be not beneficial, that they weren't playing their structured defense. Quinn kind of had to bring them back into their shell and make them play the correct way, and maybe that's going on a little bit as well. You know, frankly, the other one is Portland may have discovered something. Portland has always played Dame and CJ to open the game for 5 or 6 minutes, then split them for most of the night until they came back together. They played all of their minutes together, which might be the answer if they can get enough bench play otherwise. Or maybe if they don't, maybe they're just that good when both of them are on the floor. They were plus 223 last year with them on the floor. And that's a tough matchup when you have one of the best pick and roll guys in the league, with Nurkic, one of the best pick setters, and then McCollum's a great spot-up shooter. They were without Mo Harkless last night, who's another good spot-up shooter. I think Portland's been dismissed a bit overall. But with that said, the Jazz defensive rating shouldn't be a 122. It just shouldn't. So that's a lack of intensity and urgency and impact on the game that we haven't seen on these guys, and it is just preseason, but that's exactly what we saw. There might be a reason, a mindset issue that we need to talk about, that might be the one area where we're taking a little bit of, I would say, a false pretense to who the Jazz are, and maybe is our one area where some of our preseason excitement is a little misleading. We'll talk about that coming up here in a second, the Tavo Cephalosha with the Culture Code. As I mentioned, Locked On NBA, the preview edition. This is a great week to get ready for the season. All of our local experts give you about a 5 or 7 minute breakdown on their team, what they know. It's the local experts on the biggest stories, and it's at Locked On NBA. Today's show is brought to you by Mazuma USA. If you're a small business owner and you are not using Mazuma USA, you are costing yourself time and money. Frank, I don't know if it's you're the same as I am, but as somebody who's running a business in the Locked On Podcast Network, I just want to work on the network. I don't want to deal with paperwork. I don't want to deal with any of those kind of things. Well, you have to. You don't have a choice. But that's where Mazuma comes in. Mazuma USA, starting at $75 a month, assigns a CPA and a tax person to your company. They meet with you immediately, connect into your systems, immediately give you your first set of reports. Every month you get a report. Every quarter you get a tax planning call. At the end of the year, you get all your taxes taken care of. You have a CPA and a bookkeeper that are assigned to you, and it's $75 a month off the bottom line. No contract, canceled anytime, no hidden fees. MazumaUSA.com. Call 801-980-2102. That's 801-980-2102 for a free consultation. Tell them that you came with Locked On Jazz. That's 801-980-2102. Last year, when the Utah Jazz went on their run, Rudy comes back from the injury. We will be fine. We all know it well. There's a level of urgency that they had. There is a if we lose a game, we could miss the playoffs. And a chip on the shoulder of, you know, proving Gordon wrong and a lot of different aspects last year that gave the Jazz an urgency level that they don't have this year. It's a new experience, a new process. It's not an urgency level they can have. This has been my point all year long about the offseason changes who the team is. This doesn't mean they're not going to be good, but there's no way that you can falsely recreate that same urgency. Now there's a feeling, well, we're really good. We do what we're supposed to do. We'll be fine. We'll make the playoffs. We'll be a 2 or 3 or 4 seed. And that urgency is not the same as the collective desperation that they had playing for their pride. And I think that that's a big change, and they're going to have to figure out, as the hunted rather than the hunter, how to maintain some level of productive urgency. Just going out and doing what you do, we're not that good. Let's be honest. I mean, as much as we love our guys, if you look at most teams and you say, who wins, Dame Lillard, C.J. McCollum, Mo Harkless, Aminu, and Nurkic, or Rubio, Mitchell, Ingles, Favors, and Gobert, it's not a no-brainer. You probably ask, where are you playing? So you're going to have to come out with a level of urgency and find that somewhere, whether it's a pride that you're the toughest team in the league to play, whether it's a clear understanding of that's the level you have to be at to win, that is as much as you believe in yourself otherwise, that's actually not true. That's going to take some losses for you to figure that out and accept that. I think that's a huge part of the early part of the season. And it's not it's actually not a particularly difficult schedule. It's just a heavy road schedule. We play Memphis, who's, you know, on the below average set of things, probably going to be fine until injuries, probably be good while we play them, actually, 3 times early. We play Dallas twice early. We play Sacramento twice early. Before November 20, 3 times before November 25th. We don't play a particularly hard schedule early. We play a heavy road schedule. By the time we go down to Portland December 21st, I think we will have played half of our road games already by the time we get to Portland on December 21st. So it's going to be a draining schedule, but it's not. We're not playing great teams, but that's, I think, the big challenge for this team, is to figure out what their state of mind is and how they're going to be able to find out what is going to click into them to get that same level of urgency they had last year. And it can't just be, oh, well, we have to do that. There's going to have to be some personal pride, some trench warfare, some feeling inside of making, you know, priding yourself on making the world difficult for the opponent rather than believing we can just go out and play our game. So we'll see on that. A few other things last night. I thought Dante looked pretty good. That was his first time against an NBA team. A lot of his minutes were, there was one terrible moment at fast break where he just screwed it up, and it's one of those moments where you suddenly realize how little basketball he's played because it just instinctually didn't come to him. And then there were a lot of other plays. Maybe the most beautiful play of the night, the Jazz drove into the blender, kicked it off to Dante. He drove into the lane, scooped it underneath to Favors for a dunk. And so Dante, I thought, you know, one of the questions in preseason was, are we going to see a different player in Dante, or who are we? And I thought that was a pretty encouraging sign. He's able to get to the rim. There was one time where he went up for the dunk and took a horrendous fall that are nerve-wracking. He's still, it's very, very hard to go full steam ahead and then find a way to control yourself when you get to the rim. And he's going to have to learn that. He was not fouled particularly hard, and he went flailing into a brutal fall. And those are a little unnerving considering the shoulder and the knee and everything else for him. But Dante was good last night. I think that was a really big positive. Another big positive for the Jazz last night, I thought, was in the sense of how they, you know, their shots. So they took 40 or 87 shots. 36 of them were threes against a team that defends the three pretty well. And they made half of them, which kept them, which is how they won, 123. And scored 112 and ended up having a mammoth offensive night last night. By the time it was done, George Niang was 3 of 6, Crowder 2 of 6, AB 2 of 5, 3, Rubio 2 of 5, Donovan 3 of 5, Joe 2 of 6, Favors hit a 3, 18 of 36, so 41% of their shots were threes, which is terrific. You know, that's exactly what the Jazz are hoping to get, is that 40% of their shots is three, if not more. Every team we're talking to, every team you listen to, we're going to shoot more threes, we're going to shoot more threes. The other one last night that was pretty good by the Jazz was that they just didn't take a lot of mid-range shots. The final number, 11, 14, they went 3 of 17. Actually, it looks like they stepped in here one. 4 of 18 from three last night in 87 shot attempts. It's a, you know, ideally that number is where the Rockets were last year at 20%, but if 18 of 87 is only about 20, if I'm right on that, is only about 21, 22%. So that's a pretty darn good shot selection night last night. Yeah, it's 21% by the Jazz. If I'm, you know, I'm kind of guesstimating on some of this just because some of the squares aren't exactly clear. But if I have that right, and it's hard to tell where on some of the shot chart, and the NBA doesn't have one of their pieces out of data. But if that's right, the Jazz last night had an incredible shot selection. So they took 41% of their shots at threes. They took about 40% of their shots at the rim and about 18, 19% mid-range. That will win you a lot of basketball games, whether your defense is any good or not. That is truly a awesome, awesome shot selection. Final note before we go to the Tabo Cephalosha Culture Club interview. Grayson Allen played 14 minutes. He did not play in the first half. The Jazz played regular rotation the first half, and from every indication there, Grayson Allen was not a part of it. Quinn Snyder said before the game, it's just too hard to play 11 players. You're far better off playing one guy 12 minutes than you are two guys each 6 minutes. Grayson had 4 assists, hit 3 of 5 from the field, was very good. He also turned it over 3 times and had some tough times in his defensive matchups. In his 14 minutes, that's where he is, what he does well. He does very, very well, and he's going to have to learn and get schooled in some other things. But don't be surprised if when we head to Sacramento on the 17th that he is not a part of the natural rotation for the team. All right, Tabo Cephalosha is next in the Culture Club or Culture Code interview. Jay Crowder tomorrow, Tony Bradley on Wednesday, and then Donovan Mitchell on Thursday. As of right now, we have not done Dante Exum, Rudy Gobert, and Alec Burks, and it's feeling less and less likely like those are going to get done. Doesn't seem as though the players are going to be available to get those done, so we'll keep trying. But the series may end this Thursday, a little earlier than we anticipated, and then I'm talking to Daniel Coyle in an interview on Thursday or Friday, so we'll have that probably next week to kind of wrap for you to carry it up through opening day. NFL, if you're an NFL fan, Locked On NFL has the local stories for the biggest experts every Monday, and then a great lineup of guests. Sage Rosenfels on Tuesday, Mike Renner of Pro Football Focus on Wednesday, The Number Look. Thursday, the great Mike Sando of ESPN joins Matt Williamson, so make sure you subscribe to Locked On NFL. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Chevy. Chevy's got an incredible lineup of cars right now. If you haven't checked it out, I bet you know well the amazing SUV lineup at the top of the line. You think about it, the Suburban and the Tahoe. Those are well, well known. What might not be as well known is how nice the Equinox and the Traverse are. I'm driving the Equinox right now. Fan. Big fan. Solid car. Really impressed with both of the last two Chevys I've driven, of how quiet they are, and which in turn gives you great comfort inside. Also, frankly, as I kind of kidded, makes me go a little faster than I want to. The Equinox I'm driving has a 1.5 turbo double cam motor, quick torque, 170 horsepower, quieter, better fuel economy, great safety rating. And then there's the Traverse, which is right, which is the next step up. It's got three rows of seating, latest and greatest of everything, super camera system. The mirror turns into a backup camera. Third row of seats, you can seat up to eight. All-wheel drive, but that's not great fuel efficiency. So, like, on a day like today, where generally everywhere you don't need all-wheel drive, despite the fact I can see snow, you can switch it into two-wheel drive. And then on days where you need all-wheel drive, you can run it as all-wheel drive. So, really nice features. The console by Chevy, the touchscreen and all of that, really well done. Shows you the level of detail they're going to. Check it out at Murdoch Chevy. If you use Murdoch, you're getting the 92 years of Murdoch relationship in Utah, and Chevy, the bread and butter that is Murdoch and Salt Lake City. They're in Woods Cross as well as in Logan, and you get the car washes for life, safety inspection for life, 5-day return policy, and the price match guarantee. So, Tabo, when you guys left, everyone talked about family. Like, that was the word. What do you guys mean by that?
Oh, it's a word that's important for everyone, especially when we spend so much time together as a team. You know, we have to interact with one another as family, and that builds, you know, builds the confidence, builds the camaraderie that we need to sustain a long season with many, you know, hard time and good time, and we got to be able to communicate. And I think, you know, there's no better example than a family, you know, where we can be honest and at the same time loving and caring to one another.
So you've done this, I think, is this your 14th season? Is that right?
13th?
Yep. So you've done this a few times. What is the, why do some groups come together and become better than the sum of the parts?
I think it's, you know, it's about chemistry. And sometimes you find it, sometimes you don't. I don't know if there's a special recipe for it. But like I was saying, I think being honest with one another, holding each other accountable, and just, you know, looking out for one another, you know, wanting the teammates, the next guy to do well, wanting him to shine, and that really, you know, brings the team on another level as far as a you know, just everything coming together.
So in this book, Culture Code, that I read, they talk about the first phenomena is that an individual has to feel safe. And then, in a sense, they believe safety is the willing to be vulnerable, so that you might share your deepest thoughts with someone, or you mm-hmm. share that you don't understand something. As a basketball player, does that ring true?
I would have to think about it a little deeper. Vulnerability is not necessarily the word that we use the most in a basketball court or in a locker room. But there's definitely some truth to it. You know, you have to be able to be yourself and not hide things. You know, I mean, we go, all of us, you know, go through tough times and good times, and you want to be able to share that with your teammates.
They talk about the leader, so in this case it would probably be Quinn, allowing for someone to be willing to say, I don't understand, or I need to, and that type of vulnerability where you're saying, wait a sec, I need a little help here.
Yes.
Does that exist?
Definitely, definitely. And I think Quinn is great at, you know, letting people tell when they don't understand, or even if they don't agree. You know, at the end of the day, he's going to make the decision, and we got to live with it. But, you know, there's a time where we can talk about things and just let ourselves be ourselves, and that's how you build that that confidence.
There's a great restaurant, I think it's called Per Se, Thomas Keller in New York, and a new manager took over, and the last thing he said to him is, if you try to do everything yourself, we're in a lot of trouble. If you ask 10 different questions tonight, we might be okay. How do you get men, basketball players, who don't like vulnerability, to have a culture of you're better off asking 10 questions than you are to try to do it yourself?
I think it's about, you know, just being comfortable going to the coach and saying you didn't understand. And, you know, based on his answer, you're going to be comfortable doing it again or not. And I think Quinn has done a great job just letting us, you know, be ourselves. And he wants that two-way conversation when he talks about something new on the court. You know, he really wants our input.
He allowed you, or this is just how it happens, but let's say he allowed it, to talk to guys when you after you were injured, really without, I think, without necessarily knowing exactly what you were saying. How does that play into this camaraderie or making you feel as though you've got a role even when you're hurt?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, we talk with Quinn, and after over 10 years in this league, you know, I think he has that confidence in me that, you know, I've been through quite a few playoff series and long season and good ones and not so good ones. So, you know, I think we all have the same goal. And he knows that, you know, for me, it's all about winning. So when I talk to one of the player, the younger player or whoever it is, you know, I think that's the main thing. We have to be on the same page, all of us.
Share two more studies from the book that I thought were interesting to get your kind of reactions to them as a player. So one was this, that they have these groups, you know, a group of four or five, and you put one person in the group that they plant. It's totally negative. Okay. And the group's he's not necessarily doing anything to derail them, but their performance goes down. And then the other is you put somebody who's very positive and okay, energetic, and obviously this, you know where this happens, so the group gets better. Mm-hmm. Who are the people in this group that lead that positive energy?
There's so many. That's the great thing about this team. We all love coming to work, and it shows it at practice, and it shows in the game. We enjoy being around each other. I can go down the list, and I mean, really, there's nobody that is not you know, coming in ready to work and has a positive mindset on what we try to accomplish.
You made an interesting comment that they talk about, that being in these around these groups is almost addictive.
Yes, yes, I can say, you know, after 13 years, you know, every time we find that camaraderie. Within the team, it's one of the most beautiful things. You know, like I said, we spend so much time together, and when we really genuinely enjoy each other's company, you know, good things are about to happen.
Apologize for the wind, everyone. Actually, let's duck. We're going to duck right in here for a second. Was there a moment in time when you realized that there was a togetherness to the group?
Early on, you know, I think I came in with a group that had some habits together already, you know, Joe, Fave, Alec, Rudy, obviously, you know, so those guys, you know, kind of led the way as far as just being that type of team where we can talk about whatever is on our mind in the locker room and pushing each other to get better, you know, and that's where it started. And I think everybody, you know, that we've added to the team has the same mindset and understands that.
They talk about overriding themes to a group. If there's an overriding theme to the Jazz, what do you think it is?
Unselfishness and toughness. I think it's a mental thing to be tough and also a physical one. And he shows the way we play, I think.
Looking at just you for a second, you are where as a player in your mind, and where do you want to get to still at this point?
Good question. You know, it's one of those things. You know, you have a lot of pride when you're a basketball player, when you're an athlete. I think in general, and I want to get better. I want to keep getting better. I think there's no age where, you know, you're done learning and you've peaked. You know, so I think for me, it's a, you know, I had a great season. For me, it's just about like staying healthy and guiding the young guys and doing what I can on the court. And you know, I'm working extremely hard to come back and be 100%. And, you know, getting better with my shots, getting better with my selection on the offensive end.
Where is the team right now?
In a good spot. In a good spot, you know, finishing last season the way we did, this regular season and then going into the playoff and being able to, you know, beat a very good team with a lot of talent. I think it shows that the team is the strength of this team, and we're going to keep building on that.
And where does the team want to go? And what are the obstacles that derail that?
Well, I think in sports, it's always, you know, the obstacles are the competition. So, you know, I can't speak too much on that. But I think one thing is for sure, you know, we're going to keep working. And we're not afraid of any team. So we're going to go out there and battle and play extremely hard every night and see where that leads us.
They say that you have to have lots of catch, like really good cultures have catchphrases and individual sayings. Does your head coach have any sayings, catchphrases, things that he that jumped to mind?
Not off the bat like that, but he's a highly intellectual guy. So I think sometimes even what he says might go over the head of a few people, but he always has the utmost energy and positiveness, you know. So whatever message you try to relay, you can feel that.
Thank you, Tabo.
All right, thank you.
Big thanks to Tabo Cephalosha. He's always interesting. Had some interesting comments there as well. Tomorrow coming up on the program, we'll hear from Jay Crowder as he reveals a little bit of what he went through in the off season. Locked On NBA Today will release the NBA previews all on the Locked On Podcast Network.